Hello, my friends, and welcome to episode number 47 of Solo BG Podcast. And we have a very special episode, like always. We're going to talk about a solo game, but I mean, it's more like a competitive game, but you can play it solo. And if this is your first time in the show, well, I want to tell you that this show or this podcast is about solo and cooperative board games. That's right, you listen right. For games or board games that you can play solo. And believe me, you will have a blast if you try it. Probably you're like, that's weird right now. But, you know, give it a chance and you can listen to our episode, to this episode and then the previous ones. But anyway, once every month, that means once every 3 weeks, I guess, or once every 4 weeks, we do a solo with friends, which basically we talk about a board game that it cannot be played solo, that it's only fully competitive or semi-cooperative or some other mechanic, but that you're not able to play it solo. So that's Solo with Friends once a month, but today it's just an episode of Solo BG Podcast, which it could fit on Solo with Friends, but this game, they were the people that designed this game, which is a very famous designer, he was very smart and he did a solo variant for all of us that are fan or solo of solo board games. Anyway, this is episode number 47. We're getting close to episode 50. And, you know, with that being said, let's start with the show. I hope you enjoy. I hope you have fun. Because this is a game, the game that we're going to talk about tonight. That when if you were to tell me just about this game and the mechanics, probably I would be away from it. Because I'm not a huge fan. But this game changed the perspective for me. And now, I love it. Here is, I already spoil you. I already went ahead on my thoughts. Welcome to Solo BG Podcast, episode number 47. Here we go, in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Solo BG, your podcast for solo and cooperative board games. Here you will find everything you need to know about your favorite and most recent games. Art, rules, gameplays, and interviews. Here is your host, Derek Rodriguez.
Okay, so now we are here in Solo BG Podcast. Once again, hi and welcome. And before we jump into this evening game, let me tell you, as always, what I've been playing recently. And honestly, if I'm being honest with you, more than playing, I've been painting a lot recently. I've been having fun painting with miniatures from Street Masters, which from the Salier Brothers and Blacklist game, which right now, a lot of you amazing listeners are receiving probably your copies of Aftershock, which it was a very successful Kickstarter from the Salier Brothers. And probably you're having a blast, and you know that it has tons and tons and tons, and once again, sent tons of miniatures. So I've been painting some of the Street Masters miniatures, and also I got another game from Fantasy Flight, which I'm having a blast as well, and I'm looking forward to do an episode and share my thoughts with you and share, you know, my experiences with you, which is Lord of the Rings, Journeys in the Middle Earth, which basically does the same mechanic as the famous Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition, which you have the app that it's basically playing as a DM during the game or is managing the game for you, so you don't have to worry too much about, you know, shuffling a lot of decks and bringing the new stuff other than the setup that it will be instructing you. And it's like a dungeon crawling adventure game, fully cooperative, but also it includes a lot of cool, very good quality miniatures. And I've been playing those ones as well. And once again, it's the same mechanic basically as the Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition. But now, you know, with the Lord of the Rings, which honestly is a theme that I really enjoy. They also did the same mechanic or the same implementation for a Star Wars Imperial Assault, which now some people, they're saying that the game is dead. And I'm not very sure about, you know, about that, if in the competitive way or in the skirmish way. But at least in the cooperative game now with the app implementation, it seems like now they're releasing more digital content for the game, which is basically more expansions, more adventures, So for us that you know that we like solo and cooperative games, it's great. So I guess the game is more alive than ever. I guess I will say that. And also I guess Descent, another very famous one from Fantasy Flight, which by the way, I know part of the design was by my friend Adam Sandler. It also has the app implementation. So I'm looking forward for the future with Fantasy Flight and bringing more of these epic games, you know, with the app implementation. I'm a huge fan. I know there's a lot of controversy, and we're going to have an episode soon as well to talk about it. You know, when you bring some technology to the table, and, you know, there are some people that, you know, they say, like, well, you know, if I'm playing a board game, I just want the technology away. But honestly, I mean, come on, we are in the almost 2020, so, I mean, we have to have the technology, and I'm looking forward to see that bridge, how it keeps evolving, that bridge with the technology and the board games. And, you know, it's cool. In my opinion, I love it. So anyway, we will have an episode about that as well. But besides Street Masters, besides, you know, Lord of the Rings, I also been playing like crazy Marvel Champions, the card game. What a game, honestly. I'm thinking about, of course, also do an episode about it. But here's the thing. I guess it's unavoidable to not spoil my thoughts on the game, because just like most of you, I love the game. I'm having a blast. I mean, I'm playing solo, playing cooperatively, two players, three players, four players. It takes a little while, you know. I'm not a huge fan of the four player mode of Marvel Champions, but in general, I mean, I love it. And it's even like, as you know, I'm a huge DC Batman fan, and I was like, you know, like kind of my brain was like close to Marvel, probably because I'm not a huge fan of the MCU, honestly. But this game, it's making me, it's so good, and I'm having so much fun that the characters are very well developed, and I don't know too much about Marvel, like background comics, other than the general, you know, like I remember growing up watching X-Men, the animated series, I guess the cartoon, and I love it. It was my favorite, probably. I don't have any X-Men or Marvel Champions yet, and I'm looking forward, but it's making me, like, want to read the comics from Marvel, you know, like the old ones, and start from the beginning. It's making me want to watch the whole MCU again, since Iron Man, and you know, it's such a good game that it's changing my perspective towards Marvel, which probably you would say, well, it's a little bit late because, you know, it's already been 10 years of MCU, which it has been very successful. But what I'm trying to say that this game, definitely, it has been something different in this 2019, and I'm pretty sure you agree with me. I'm pretty sure most of you amazing listeners are Marvel fans, my friends. I'm not, but you know, now it's like I need to watch, I need to read, because the game is very good. Besides that, I've been playing Tiny Epic Galaxies, I've been playing Tiny Epic Mix and Tiny Epic Tactics. Those three games, I got them from my friends from Gamblin, which by the way, we just finished recording a great episode with my friend Sam Aho. He plays a very important role in the Gamblin Games company or Gamblin Games studio, and we recorded an episode about it. They were very kind to send me those three games. I played them a lot, you know, with all the modalities, and we will have the episode very soon, probably. You know, I'm trying to prepare something special, so I'm pointing to release the episode more towards December, but you stay tuned because I had a blast playing those three. Also, I've been playing Super Camelot. That's from Lynn Vander Games Studios. I backed that one on Kickstarter. I got it, and it's a fun game. You know, I mean, I remember paying like $35 on the Kickstarter, something like that, $35 American. I don't regret. The price is very fair for what you get on the game, and it's basically, I guess, it's like in a Zelda. You know, the SNES and Super Nintendo Zelda game, kind of the same, fully competitive for players, and everybody's doing their own thing, trying to get the three relics from the world and come back to the castle, and with those three relics, which is basically the same as the Triforce in Zelda, once you bring it back to the castle, you get the Holy Grail, and whoever gets the Holy Grail first well, is the winner. I don't know why they didn't did a solo mode on that game, because when we were playing it, we were talking about it, and basically everybody's playing their own game. It's just a race. So, you know, that game, I guess if you want to play it solo, you can just try to make some home rule, like, okay, I'm going to start to look for the grails, and as long as I don't die, I don't get knocked out from the game, I'm alive, and if I get killed or knocked out, well, that's it. Anyway, I don't know why Live Battle Studios, they didn't did a solo mode for this one, but it could easily, you know, be done. And also, I played Dead of Winter: The Long Night. Such a good game, Dead of Winter, honestly. It's one of those games that, you know, I don't know exactly the year that it came, probably 2012, 2013, around those times. Probably 2014, I don't know, like I said, I don't remember exactly. It was one of my first games when I was, like, very, very, very deep now in board games. And what a such a good game, honestly. I've been enjoying it. I play it twice, you know, because of the Halloween also, Halloween times, and it's just such a good game, you know. The traitor part, the traitor role that you don't know who can be the traitor on the group, and it brings you back to the first couple of seasons of Walking Dead, when the governor and, you know, even Negan and the saviors, and so good, Dead of Winter. But I've been playing it a lot, and also I've been having fun. I play Heroes of Dominaria as well from Magic the Gathering world, and I also had fun as well. And I also been playing today's episode, which I haven't mentioned it, probably you already read it on the title of the episode, either through Spotify, Google Play, Amazon, Stitcher, etc., etc., and wherever you listen to podcasts. But in this episode, we're going to talk about Medieval Age by Matt Leacock. I've been playing as well that game a lot because it has a solo variant. It's published by Edgar Spiel. And Matt Leacock, of course, huge, huge, very, very famous designer. Probably you know him because he did Pandemic. Anyway, let's start with the show. Let's start with the box and cover. We're going to talk about Era Medieval Age. It has a very nice mechanic of game, which, like I said on the intro, I was not a fan, I'm sorry. I had fun, but I was not a fan. Oh my goodness, my accent. I was not a fan, F-A-N, okay? But I had fun, F-U-N. And none of this mechanic, I have never been a huge fan of the Roll and Write games. But this one, it's not a Roll and Write, but it changed my mind. And now I want to try more of those games. And here we go. Let's start with the box and cover of Era Medieval Age. Box and cover. Okay, so now we are in the box and cover section of the show. And before we start with the box and cover, of course, Matt Leacock, he's one of the most famous designers in the board game universe. I wanted to give you a brief like list of the games that he has been published, which probably you already know, or the games that he has designed, better said. He designed Pandemic, Roll Through the Ages, The Bronze Age, Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert, Pandemic the Cure, Pandemic Legacy, which is probably the most famous legacy game that there is there, the Season 1, Thunderbirds, Nitwit, Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu, Pandemic Iveria, Chariot Race, Mole Rats in Space, which we talked about it on a few episodes ago. I played with my friend Caleb and his daughter, and he also designed Pandemic Rising Tide, Pandemic Legacy in Season 2, Pandemic Fall of Rome, Forbidden Sky, and in this case, Era Medieval Age. I have the box here. You know I love to do this. Let's put the mic here in the way I can shake the box very good. Here it goes. You know I love to do that. And we're gonna unbox the box. We're gonna unbox the box of the game in a little bit in the inside the box section. Anyway, Era Medieval Age, it has a very nice, it's a big box. It has like that, it looks like those castles. I don't know if we are in Germany or in Italy, but it has like a nice village of houses and then the castles on the back, and then like in a cloud or a fog, it says Era Medieval Age, with also the field crops over there. It's published by Edgar Spiel, and this version, it was released in the United States and in UK as well. Then on the side of the box, it tells you that it plays a 10-year-old plus, that it's 1 to 4 players, and that it plays in 45 to 60 minutes. And he has some villagers over there and some people that they look like from the monarchy. And people with, you know, making baking bread and all the stuff. And then on the back of the box, it shows you the components, which they are very nice, very good quality. And it tells you what it includes in the box that we will talk on a little bit. And it says, welcome to the medieval Spain. There it is. It's in Spain. My God. I should have read that. Welcome to the medieval Spain. In era, build and customize your domain with your personal dice pool. Collect and manage resources. And it choose from 13 unique buildings. A hospital to protect your domain from diseases, they're asking you. A cathedral to score many points at the end of the game. A townhouse to add more dice to your hands. Easier choice where the choice are unlimited to build and design your civilization or your city. You know, and last but not least, keep an eye on your opponents because looting and disasters can ruin your strategy. Expand your domain, improve your dice pool, harvest more resources, and build even more powerful buildings. And that's Era. Once again, it tells you that it plays 10-year plus, 1 to 4 players, 45 to 60 minutes, and the game is designed by Matt Leacock. The illustrations are by Chris Williams. And the producer is Sophie Grable or Gravel, and it's from Eggerspiel and Plan B Games, which, by the way, I forgot to say, but I want to say hi to the, my friend from Eggerspiel and Plan B, because my friend Mike Young from Plan B Games, he was very nice and he provided the game for us to do a review and an episode about it. If you are following me on my social medias and Solo BG Podcast and Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, if you remember, we did a couple of live streamings on GenCon 2019. And we actually did a live streaming of this game over there in GenCon. And also, I did on the GenCon episode, I put the audio of that live streaming and we talk about the game anyway. But now we are dedicating a full episode to Era, which once again, it plays 1 to 4 players. With that being said, let's jump and let's see what is inside the box. Inside the box. Okay, so now I'm moving the box and let's open. Let's do the audio unboxing. Here it is. Let me grab the mic with one of my fingers. Which, by the way, Mike, I guess, hi to Mike Young, my friend. Thank you for providing the game. Here is the big box. This is a humongous box. But, you know, usually having a big box, it's good, you know. It's kind of disappointing when you have a big box and you open it and the game is like just a bunch of cards. It's like, you could have put a probably smaller one, but in this case, it's needed because you have tons and tons of contents. What do you get? Let's see. What the first thing that you got when you open the book, it's the nice rule book. And the rule book, I will tell you in a little bit, I'm opening it right now. It's 12 full-color double-sided pages. The illustrations of the game or the art of the game is very nice, very beautiful. And it has a very simple 12 double-sided pages rulebook that explains you very well how the game plays. Oh my God, we are very often saying recently, which I'm very glad and I'm very happy to say, that in most of the games that we have reviewed recently, including Era, the rulebook are very well done. It's those kinds of rulebooks that you don't need to go to. Let me go to Board Game Geek, or let me go to Reddit, or let me go to YouTube, or whatever. No. You have all the information here, and that's nice. That's very good, because it was very often, usually on Kickstarters, that you get their rulebook, and oh, okay, now we go to the, what they call it, their runner, right? Like, or the FAQ, and let's see, because there's some misunderstanding on the rules and whatever. And I guess the more epic the game, the more complex, and the more, you know, things that can come out. But on this one, at least in Era, with Matt Leacock, you can see the effort on the design, you can see the effort on the rules. Very well explained, very simple, very straightforward, and, you know, very ready, I guess, for you to have fun. So the next thing that you have after you open the rulebook is a little notepad that, of course, is to keep a score, because this is a score game, competitive game, but it has a very nice solo mode. So what do you get inside the box? You get a bunch of dice and trays and stuff like that. You get 136 miniatures. That's it, 136 different buildings, castles, hospitals, church, monasteries, universities, things like that. Very nice quality. You have walls, you have a tower, you have some scorch areas as well. You get 36 very nice, well done almost like handmade dice. The dice of the game, they're very nice. Very, very, very nice dice. Then you have four player boards, which we're going to talk about those player boards because not everything was amazing, but they fix it. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. You have the four player boards, 25 packs, 5 tracking tokens, 1 pad score sheet, which we already talked about it, 4 screens that every player will have the screen with, you know, with the description of what each building does and how many points you get and things like that, and the nice rule book that we already mentioned. That's what you get inside the box. So now that we're gonna talk about inside the box, let's see how the game plays. Gameplay. Alrighty, so now let's talk about how the game plays. Once again, I guess I will leave it for my thoughts. I will tell you how the game plays and all the stuff, and then we're gonna talk about the mechanics. Like I told you in the beginning, I wasn't a huge fan of the Roll and Write. Now, I wanna play more. This is not a Roll and Write, okay? Let's start with the gameplay and you will see what I'm saying, okay? So the first thing you're gonna do is you're gonna give, if you're playing, of course, you know, with the max amount of players, which is the four players, you're gonna give 1 trade to each player, right? And then you're gonna give 4 pecs, or 6 pecs, better said, to each of the players. They're gonna start with all the resources that you're gonna get. You start with 0 goods, then you start with 1 stone, 2 wood, 4 food, and then you put one of those pecs in a culture track and in a disaster track, okay? That they're on the side of the tray. Those two, culture and disaster track, they will give you basically negative points and positive points at the end of the game. But if you build certain things, that culture can, you know, give it a push and give you more victory points at the end of the game. So basically, once you do the setup, which is pretty easy, it won't take you too much to set up, you're going to lay up all the different buildings on the table, and then you're going to have tokens over there as well to mark which buildings are done after, you know, at the end of the game, and that will trigger the end of the game anyway. But before we talk about that, let's start with the stamps that what are you going to do on your turn. And on each turn, you're going to roll, you're going to collect, you're going to feed, you're going to roll, you're going to check the disasters, you're going to build, and you're going to extort or fight against the other players, which that's the spicy part, I guess, of the game, which me, particularly, I like it. We're going to talk about that in our thoughts on the next section, but that's the steps of the game. So roll, basically, you're going to roll, you're going to start with 4 workers, which is 3 yellow dice, and 1 gray die, which is for fighting, so you are going to roll those dice, and you can roll them up to 3 times. That's it. But all every dice has a school part, like a death school part, you know? So once you roll and you get that school part, for every dice that you get the school phase, which anyway will give you a reward, that's it. You're not able to reroll that die anymore. So you're going to roll up to 3 times, and at the end, once you finish rolling, then you're going to jump into the next step of the game, which is the collect phase. And what you're going to do on the collect phase is basically, if you have buildings that give you resources or food on your tray, on your city, then you're going to collect those resources. And also, you're going to collect resources from your dice, either culture or resources. They're going to give you food, they're going to give you wood, they're going to give you stones, or they're going to give you culture. And then you're going to feed your workers. Basically, every die is a worker, and you need to feed your workers. Now, for every worker that you don't feed, well, you're going to get, you know, negative points, and you're going to advance on the death track on your tray. So basically, on your tray, you're trying to build your city, right? Then you're going to do the disasters. Now you're going to count the number of skulls, the skulls of the die that you have, or the number of dice showing skulls, and different things will trigger, like you can have disease in your city if for every building that is clustered with each other, or you can, you know, had to place a scorch piece on the other player's tray, which basically that occupies like 4 spaces on the tray, and that's it. They cannot build anything else there, or probably it's going to give you more disasters point for the end of the game, things like that. And then you're going to go to the build part, which for every hammer, every little hammer that you have showing on your dice, you can build, and that's when you're going to manage your resources that you have, your goods, your woods, your stone, to try to build different buildings that they already set up on the table. You can build a church, you can build a monastery, you can build a hospital, you can build another farm to get more food at the beginning of the round. I'm sorry, on the collect phase of the next round. You can get a windmill, that will give you also wood, every collecting phase and things like that. You're going to have different buildings. There's buildings that they give you extra dice, which those dice, probably you can get the building with the blue dice, which is called, I will tell you in a little bit which one it is, because in that way, I'm not just guessing. You can build the townhouse, which that one, it gives you one burglar dice, which is basically one blue die that it usually tends to give you more goods. Or if you can build another keep, which is like the tower, you get a noble die, which is the great die that helps you to fight. Or if you build a longhouse, it gives you a peasant die, which is the one that it can give you food and wood or even stone, and you get those dice. Well, but the more you build buildings with die, remember, you're getting more workers, and you need to play your strategy very wise, that you will need to feed them as well. That's why one of a good strategy is to build as many farms as you can, even inside or outside your city on the trade. In that way, you can get more food every collecting phase. And basically, that's it. Now, the last part of the turn, which is the extort, now is when you're going to compare with the gray die, which is the noble, how many swords you have. So I think the max on that dice is 3 swords. So then you're going to compare with the other player. And for example, if I have 3 swords and the player on my right has 2, I mean 3 swords, the player on my right has 2, and then the player on his right has 2, then one player has 1, then the other player has 3, well, then we start to extort. So I'm going to start, if I'm the first player, I'm going to start to my right, let's say, and I'm going to ask him for a resource. If he cannot give me that resource that I'm demanding, then he's going to go 1 on the disaster track on his trade, right? So he's minus, he's getting more negative points at the end of the game, and I will keep going on the table around as long as I beat, with the swords amount. Now, there's also some shields on that die that they can protect against me extorting. And then every player is going to go around asking for more resources from everybody as long as they have more swords showing on their die, or if they have the equal, well, nothing happens. And that's when you probably want to build another tower in another turn, in that way you can get another noble and you can probably have more options to get more swords and things like that. So, I know that some people, they're not a huge fan of, fighting against each other, let's call it, like extorting in this case, in this game. I like it. I love it. I mean, this is a spicy, I guess, dangerous part of the game that it really can change the strategy and you can really mess it up with other players. And I love it. I love it because it allows you to be more, more in the edge of the game, more like, okay, like I'm getting these resources, but probably the player on my right, oh my God, they roll more swords and oh, I hope they don't take those resources from me because I want to keep them for the next round and things like that, right? So it can really change your strategy during the game. I love it. I like it. And those are the steps of the game. Now, you're wondering how you play solo. Well, the way that you play solo, well, before that, let me tell you what ends the game. So the game ends once you finish certain amount of spaces with buildings, right? Different like regions of buildings. And it all depends if you're playing 2 players, 3 players, or 4 players. You have tokens that they will mark once, let's say, Once the keeps or the towers are gone there's no more available on the middle of the table, then you place 1 X token, which means there's nothing there. And then if you place 2 or 3, the game ends once again according to the number of players. Now, how you can play solo? Very easy. Well, you get your tray to build your city, and you get another tray to keep the round, to keep the track of the rounds. You're gonna play for 8 rounds, and that's it. So on the tray that you're gonna grab 1 tray, you're gonna place it 1 peg on the 8th round, on the 8th marker on the wood, and that you're gonna go from there to round 0, basically. That's how you're gonna keep track. You're gonna do exactly the same. The only thing that in the setup, you're gonna return 1 long house, 2 keeps, and all the remaining tracking tokens back to the box. And then you're gonna play just like if you were playing a 2-player game. But you start with 3 scorch areas on your city, because usually you start only with 2. Then you're gonna gather. The disaster is gonna apply only to yourself, all the penalties you're gonna build. But on the extort, you're gonna roll for Mr. Sir Philip. You're gonna roll for Sir Philip. And if Sir Philip have more swords than you on that extortion roll, well, he's gonna take goods from you and he's gonna start to take resources from you, I'm sorry. and his favorites are the goods, then the stone, then the wood, or the food. If you don't have any of those that you can give him, just like in the multiplayer game, you go low on your disaster track, and those are, once again, negative points at the end of the game. But if you happen to have more swords than Sir Philip on his roll, then you can demand research from him. And usually he's going to roll also two peasants' die, which is the yellow die that they can give you all the resources. So he rolls his fight, he rolls the other peasants, and if you win, you can get the resource that it shows on his rolls. Now, if their rolls, they don't show any resource, then you can choose. But anyway, that's basically it. You're going to play 8 rounds, and then you're going to do the scoring, and it's going to be kind of like beat your own score, but it has different levels of with your results. So let's say if you make less than 45 points, you only are a serf, a poor showing, keep working on the soil, right? If you get 45-64, you're a peasant, you have a fair start, at least you have the freedom. If you make 75 to 79, you're a merchant, you have a good deal, you can bar it up, you know, you can do better. 80-89, you're a knight, an excellent joust, will you fare better at your next tournament, and then you can become an owl and monarch and pope, and you're going to keep going just to beat your own score. And, you know, that's how you play solo. It's basically it. But this game also, when you play competitive, also you try making tracking of the points at the end of the game. Because one very nice mechanic of this game, once you play solo or competitive, it doesn't matter, is that in that scorepad that they give you for the game, you're going to start to count the points. For every keep you have, one victory point. For every longhouse, one victory point. And so for all the buildings. Now, the nice thing is that if you have all those buildings in a walled area, that means that all those buildings are enclosed by walls, then all of those buildings, they score twice or they score double, which is very good. And then at the end also, you're gonna count the points for the culture, you're gonna count the points for whoever has the most culture, the most walled area, or the longest walled area, and then you're gonna subtract the disaster points, and that's it. Whoever make more points is the winner of the game. And now that we explain how the game plays, let's go to the next section, which is if I rather play this game solo or competitive, and what are my thoughts on the game? Solo or competitive? Okay, so now we are in my favorite section of the show. I love to share with you my thoughts of every game that we review. And we are in the section that if we rather play this game solo or competitive, and what do we think about this game? First of all my respects and to Matt Leacock and to the people from Plan B and Eggers Peele, because they really did a huge, huge thing here. And Matt Leacock, of course, you know, that's, like I said before, he's one of the most famous designers around. And almost when you see a game from with those names like Matt Leacock, it's almost like an automatic purchase. You know, this for me is like, oh, okay, well, you know, it happened the same with Eric Lang and other designers. But anyway, now we have Era, a Medieval Age. Once again, this is a roll and build mechanic, similar to the roll and ride, but at the same time different because it's a roll and build, because you're building your city on the trades. That mechanic, if you would have told me, I would have been like, oh, well, I don't know, because, you know, I'm more like epic games and dungeon crawlers and things like that, and games that I can die and stuff, you know, more adventurous. I played this game at Gen Con, we did the live streaming, and I was surprised. Once again, I like when I have these surprises and when they prove me wrong, because that changed my mind of roll and build, at least. And I like it. I can tell you already that I like the game, that I like the mechanic, which is surprising. I like the mechanic of roll and build. It's very nice because you have the nice, very nice components, the very nice miniatures. So it has a good mechanic, in my opinion. The replayability of the game, basically, it's more about the replayability of your strategy. Because if you start with the strategy, like, okay, like, you know, like I mentioned before, the most walled area, if you have a bigger wall and surrounding the buildings, it's like, well, you're going to get more points. But you're also thinking, when you're playing multiplayer, that there's only certain amounts of long walls. There are only certain amounts of medium walls. There's only certain amounts of small walls. So other players will try to do that strategy as well. So that's when you, the replayability comes that if you in probably in this game you try to build a big wall area, a big city, but you couldn't finish it because the walls were gone. So probably next game you're gonna try to make a smaller city, and probably you can do two different wall areas. Now there's buildings like the market that, as long as you have spaces around, I mean, spaces free around the market, you get more points. There's also huge buildings that they give you a lot of victory points, like the university. But also, is if you have a lot of culture, then it's convenient to get the university. If you don't have a lot of culture on the track, well, then the university, it won't be that powerful. Then it's the hospital. That's another good strategy. Then there's a strategy that you can put the most that you can buildings together inside a small area, in that way you can make more points at the end of the game. But you're at risk, because if somebody else rolls the disaster, the school die a lot, a certain amount, they can give you a disease, which all the buildings and the houses that are touching each other, they will count one negative point and they will advance one on the disaster track because everybody got sick on your town. So things like that. So the replayability come part in how the different strategies you can do on the next game to make more victory points, how risky you want to play, how cautious you're going to play, things like that, which buildings you're going to go after, your city, your walled area, and things like that. So that's where the replayability comes part in play on this game. It's not going to change. I mean, it's the same role and build, the same buildings. It's just more about your strategy. With our surprise, the replayability, it's good, because the game is the same, but it's good, it's fun, you know? So the replayability, it wasn't a concern for me on this game. I can see going either way that, you know, like, since you're playing the same game, is, well, where is the replayability? But in this game, I guess it has to be done like that, because you want to do a better score next time, so it's the same game, but the replayability feels good. Even if you're playing the same, it doesn't feel like, if you know what I mean, because your strategy will change. So that's where the replayability come and play part on this game. The art of this game is very good. I really like it. It's very nice. It's those kinds of boxes that it's a huge box that you see on the gaming store, and you're like, oh, I wanna get the game. Even if probably I don't know too much what it's about it, I wanna game it. At least I'm gonna research on the game because it looks cool. It has the same feeling like Scythe, like you have these farm people and then some mechs and things like that. Well, here you don't have mechs, you have castles and the village and everything, but you know, that kind of art similar, which is very nice, very good, and I like the art of the game. The components are great, the dice, like I mentioned, they're great, the buildings are great, the trays. Oh my goodness. We're gonna start with a con here. The tray. The tray are like a yellow mustard color kind-ish. And this game had a big issue because you were not able, unless you look very closely, to differentiate the different symbols on the tray and the different tracks on the tray, because they're the same color yellow and not with too much, like, you know, detail. It was just there and you were like, okay, my God, like, this is wood, this is a stone, this is a 1, 2, or 3. And then in every tray you have like a little part when he explains you the turn phase by phase, which is very good. And also you were like, what is this? Okay, it's torture, things like that, right? But here where the good part comes. Now, that's on the past. That's a con that it's on the past. Because I really appreciate that the people from Eggerspiel and our friends from Plan B Games as well, they listened to the fans. They listened to the big complaint about the trades. And they make it, they fix it for you, my friends. So now, if you purchase this game on your favorite local gaming store, on an Eggerspiel website or in Plan B Games website, they're gonna give you a set of stickers that you're gonna basically stick on your tray. And it changed a lot. Now the trays look beautiful. And now everything, you can differentiate everything. The step orders, the resources, the tracks. It's beautiful. It looks beautiful with stickers. I have some pictures of the game in Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at SoloBG Podcast once again. And you should check them out because the tray looks beautiful. Now with the buildings and the stickers and everything, it looks fantastic. They fix it. More publishers should do that, to be honest with you. So I want to say congratulations to Edgar Spiel and Plan B Games for listening to us, the gamers, because you really changed it and it looks fantastic. More publishers should do that. More publishers should put attention sometimes to different things on the components and be like, okay, you know what, probably this was a production error. Who knows, in China, they did this mistake. Now we're going to fix it. And I believe the people also from Brother Wise Game, they did something similar, I think with Call to Adventure or something. But anyway, I'm not sure. But more publishers should do this if you put something on a game with regarding the components or something to replace it or fix it or whatever. So now if you buy this game in your favorite local gaming store on their websites, you're going to get those stickers. In that way, you can, you know, stick them and make them look better. Because what some people were doing, it were like painting or washing the tracing. That way you could see them better. But with the stickers, they look beautiful. They do fantastic. So thank you, Edgar Spiel, once again. That was a big con for the game that now is fixed. And, you know, unless you're that kind of people like, well, you know, I don't want to stick anything. This shouldn't be like this from the beginning. Well, probably, yes. You're right. It shouldn't be like that in the beginning. But they did a mistake and they fixed it. So it's good. You know, I'm very appreciative because of that. And I'm pretty sure, my friends, also you are in the same boat like me. In general, do I recommend ERA? Yes, I recommend ERA. Like I said, it changed my perspective from the rolling right, I guess, but it's a rolling build. But now with this one, my mind is more open to do the rolling rights, you know, like to try them more because I really had fun with ERA. I recommend the game. If you have a chance to pick it up your phone on your favorite local gaming store, get it because it's a good game. From the ratings, the usual ratings that we do from Netflix, kind of, which is 0 is the word, and you want to burn the game and you don't want to see it, you don't want to see the game anymore, never, never, and forever. Or 5, that you want to play it every night because it's a fantastic and lovely game. Well, ERA, A Medieval Age from Matt Lico, Edgar Spiel, and Plan B Games gets from SoloBG a strong 4. A strong 4 because it's a game that if I have my game night at my house, or if I have a game night with my friends, and they told me, hey, can you bring ERA? Of course. If I'm having it at my place, hey, can we play ERA? Of course. I'm willing to play that game more and more. And I'm willing to play my game in more because in that way I can change the strategies and try new strategies. It's a game that it plays with 2 players, 3 players, 4 players, 1 player. Now, let me tell you if I rather play this game solo or competitive. To be honest with you, I rather play this game competitive. Definitely. Competitive is the best way of this game. I think it brags more because you have that spiciness of, you know, like the extortion and also playing with the other players, I'm sorry, and trying to, you know, read like who can you screw a little bit with when you roll the disaster rolls or when you're trying to extort resources from them and things like that. So I think because of that nice mechanic, it plays better as a competitive. But also this game has that nice solo variant that if you're gonna be able to play it competitive, you can train yourself with that nice solo mechanic. I'm not a huge fan of the beat your own score solo games, but this one is more like a training game. And you know what, I've been trying it solo and I've been having fun, you know, because last time that I tried, I believe I was a peasant. I made like 57 points or something. Now I want to do better. I want to do a knight. I have my own challenge to become a pope on the game. So, you know, you get that sort of challenging part when you're playing solo, which is good at the same time. But honestly, I'd rather play this game competitive. But also, if you get it and you're able to play with your friends, it has a nice solo mechanic that you will enjoy as well. So those are my thoughts with ERA and Medieval Age. From Matt Leacock, Edgar Spiel, and Plan B Games. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We are preparing something very special for future episodes, for episode number 50. I'm trying to get a very nice, important, big guest for the show. I don't want to spoil you yet because, you know, I'm still not 100% confirmed. But he has been one of the huge inspirations for the show, even before the show. I'm a huge fan of his content. He is from the media. And I hope he's able to find a spot on his time to be with us and record an episode with him and talk with him about board games, which basically that's why we do this. Also, it's coming up, you know, very soon, the Essen Spiel Game episode, which is going to be with my friend Mark from Not Board Gaming. He currently lives in UK, but he was fortunate to go to Essen, and we're going to record the episode very soon, and it's also going to be very soon on air in that way you can enjoy it, and good things are coming for the podcast as always. We're getting very close to Christmas time, which once again we're going to have the tiny epic episode, and we're going to have some giveaways and things like that, and that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoy it, I hope you like it, and like always, that remember that you can follow us in our social medias at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at SoloBG Podcast. And that you can listen to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That is Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Amazon Music, Pandora, iVox, wherever you listen to. You can find Hi-Hi Radio, you can find this show over there. Please share it with your friends. And like always, remember...
For victory, go tell your friends.
Till next time, see you through the speaker and at the tabletop.